Welcome to this, the 24th of the Explorer Tapes, and the last in this series. At a future date, we will resume production when our new research facility is completed, and we can mix a new set of explorers with our old regulars. In this summary, we thought it appropriate to do several things. The first is to describe our laboratory setting, the environment from which the explorer material originated. First step, that our setting be reasonably remote from any large clusters of humanity, such as a city. We cannot prove that an interference factor is present in such concentrated areas of human mental conflict. There are simply too many variables. However, all of the people we have worked with obtain far better results in a pastoral or country location. It may be simply the relaxing effect of being close to nature and perhaps fresh air. But the difference has been significant enough to locate our laboratory and our entire institute, in fact, in a rural setting. In our building, we usually have several types of environmental control chambers. These serve several purposes. The first is to remove as much as possible various specific potential stimuli to the subject. By removing these and then adding them back one by one, we might sort out those factors that do influence or enhance our thought processes, our beingness. We approached the obvious, our five senses. We controlled light, sound, air, temperature, humidity, these for starters. With a sense of touch, the most difficult, we used soft water beds and even on occasion an analgesic salve over the entire body. Obviously, once we reached the explorer mode, much of this became unnecessary. We also reduced RF or radio frequency and magnetic radiation input to these various chambers by shielding. This did have significant effects, as did the introduction of RF energy fields not normally found in nature. These two areas offer much potential. Near the environmental chamber is what we call our control room, and the two are connected by many wires and cables. The control room houses all of our sensitive equipment, both to receive data and information from the explorer subject in the test chamber, but to inject different types of signals to the explorer as needed. Originally, we went to great lengths, and sometimes still do, to receive EEG or electrical brainwave readings from the subject. We also monitored many of the typical body conditions, such as heart, respiration, temperature, blood pressure, and so on. Sometimes it would take over an hour just to attach sensors and electrodes to the subject. With experience, we found that most of what we wanted to know, that is, the state of consciousness of the subject, could be seen by electrical changes in the body. These changes were in total body voltage, actually minute changes, rather than GSR, or galvanic skin response. Therefore, we used principally this method of measurement, which required the use of only two or three electrodes. Either laziness or time was the main factor. I'm not sure which. The explorers themselves, the first ones, were a product of typical subject selection. Those who were available and willing. In other words, we used what we had. In terms of background, they included a wide variety from clinical psychologists and physicists to secretaries and farm help. Later, we began to use various testing procedures to eliminate unlikely prospects, which may or may not have been valid. Now, we have reached the general opinion that anyone can be an explorer, in our sense of the term, if the value systems can be self-adjusted. But that takes a lot of work and a lot of patience, and most people don't have that kind of patience. A typical explorer session was usually conducted by appointment. For the most part, each came at a time when another explorer was not present. Thus, there was little, if any, social interaction. In fact, most did not know one another personally. Not at all. Therefore, the possibility of cross-contamination of information was very low. The appointment factor in itself proved very interesting in one case. Well, this particular explorer that we had, a woman, usually came on Wednesdays at 5 o'clock. And as it was the custom, she had four helpers who assisted her in moving into the out-of-body state. On this particular Wednesday, she canceled her appointment, and we promptly forgot all about the fact that she was due to be there. In the interim, a visiting psychologist, also a woman, appeared on the scene and asked to be shown around the laboratory. And so we did. And, of course, and the natural thing to do was to put her in one of the booths and let her experience some of our hemisync process. We did this, and after about 10 minutes into the session of her lying in the darkened booth, listening to the hemisync, her voice came through the loudspeakers, and she asked, is there supposed to be anyone in here with me? And I responded quite naturally and said, why, no. And she said, well, there are four people in this booth with me. And so I asked her, well, who are the people in the booth? And she responded, I don't know, but two of them are arguing about something. And I asked her, well, find out what they are arguing about. And she waited for a moment. She says, they are arguing whether to pull me out of my body or not. Suddenly a great light dawned on me, and I looked at the clock, and I laughed. It was about 5 minutes after 5 o'clock. And I remembered the missed appointment of our explorer and remembered that her helpers were four in number. It was a most interesting effect. Which brings up a point. These helpers must have some sense of time, else why the mix-up? Just one of those many paradoxes we've encountered. Well, as you know, the Explorer tape recordings are the voice or audio track of the verbal exchange between the explorers in the isolation chamber and the monitor in the control room. Other recordings generally were made simultaneously of the biological instrumental readings of the session for later evaluation. No drugs or medication was used during any of the sessions. The thing you need to understand now is that the Explorer tapes, as you know and heard them, are but a small part of the total. Most of the session was another kind of exploration, usually very tedious and tiresome. Here's an example with TC.
A lower tone to a higher tone, and back to a lower one, and back to a higher one, and so on, oscillate between higher and lower tones at a 4 hertz rate.
With a 4 hertz separation?
No, not with a 4 hertz separation,
A wave upon the 4 hertz oscillation.
So that you run up and down from a higher to a lower frequency 4 times in a second.
Yes.
Sweeping frequency at a 4 hertz rate up and down, which would produce a warbling sound.
Yes.
That this would be very effective. And I have the idea that the frequency range would be rather large. You know, it wouldn't just be over a very short frequency range, but enough that you could hear a very distinct warbling.
Should the pulsing or the warbling of that frequency at 4 hertz, should it be a sine wave, a square wave, a sawtooth? Is there any difference?
A sine wave, a smooth transition. Would be best.
Fine. Then it could be useful to us.
Okay. An aside on the last subject. It is more important that the warbling cover a range of frequencies that is judged pleasant and acceptable to listen to than any specific values. We should work that out simply by trying various ranges and listening to them and picking those that seem to work the best experimentally. It's not so much the frequencies themselves that will be swept through that is effective, but rather the sweeping itself that will modulate the frequencies in a 4 hertz rate. This actually is very much what we are doing now, except now we are working in amplitude, whereas this works in frequency.
Yes, I believe I know where we can do that.
After the 4 hertz theta region is developed in a subject, and they indeed are encouraged into a theta altered state. From this point, other frequencies will have effects that are quite different than those same frequencies would have before a person passes this point. Oh, anything that's comfortable. It's the beats are more important than the carrier. The carrier can be up to 1,000 hertz or so. Anything that's comfortable, anywhere from 150 up to 700, 800, or 1,000 seems to be comfortable.
What will be the effect of some of these higher frequencies?
They will encourage resonances of a more subtle nature that become available after a person has predominantly gone to theta. They will not change the basic theta state. The theta state will remain constant, but within that theta state, levels and subtleties within that theta state can be accessed and certain levels encouraged, just as the theta delta encourages the theta state. Other substates can be encouraged with the higher frequencies.
Any particular ones at particular frequencies that you can ask for and get now? Particular frequencies that will get particular states.
I see a sequencing. They seem to travel in 25s, such as 25, 50, and then 100, were the series that I got. Now, that would encourage 3 separate states.
What are the states then related to those?
After 100, they continue. They go to 200, and they go up by hundreds then, 200 and 300 and like that. Let's see. Encourage the higher frequencies will encourage a larger degree of awareness, a larger degree of what will be experienced as awakeness, though the person will not really be waking in the normal sense, but will remain in a predominant theta state.
Stand by for a moment and I will feed you this afternoon. You would like to do this?
Yes. That seems to generate a great deal of heat.
You wish me to change it?
I'll try raising the bass frequency. It could be that having made the reporting what I reported, that I am particularly inclined to react to this now, but it does seem to be having a desired effect. It really suppresses the body and kind of wakes you up. To the point that it makes my eyes open up. Since it's been playing, my eyes seem to not want to remain closed. It just keeps them open. At the same time, though, I can feel the four-cycle pulsation in my body, and my body has gotten number and very non-lifelike. It seems to be suppressing the body awareness and heightening the mental awareness. It works sort of slowly, in that the condition that it's putting me in has taken now. It has been working gradually from when you first turned it on. And seems to continue. Interesting to see how others react to this. But remember that they must attain a good theta state before applying this particular sound.
As the question is that we should we continue the theta at the same time at a lower intensity?
Yes. Continue the theta as it was, and this tone is superimposed over that theta. While you were working on that tone, the effect of the first tone seemed to about settle out. Didn't seem to continue to get any stronger as far as its effect. So I would judge then that about 5 minutes would create the effect.
Hours upon hours were spent in patterns such as this or in other areas. For the Explorer tape releases, we used only segments we felt were of general interest, were long enough to establish a theme and were not interspersed with material of a personal nature. Here are shorter, unrelated bits and pieces for your consideration.
And we've been discussing the mind and how it works. It's like I met him and he said we're going to talk about the mind. And that just brought all sorts of questions. What is the mind? How does it work? How do we think? How do we perceive? Where we come from? And he was describing the mind as circuits which receive information all the time, whether we're aware of it or not. And then as we ask questions and as we what we call think, we are really forcing different circuitry in the brain to function. And as that happens, various thoughts come out, various ideas come out. Different perceptions from one time to another are also verbalized. And then I asked him, well, that's fine for what's happening to man now or people now, but where did the first brain come from? Where did the first person come from? And he started talking about energy systems. And I said, but energy systems, I mean, you're really telling me that they created a mind? And he's saying there is one universal mind, like a mastermind. And the universe as he describes it in this level, in this reality, is energy, a bombardment of energy. And as this energy bombarded one another, got intertwined, got intermixed, It formed circuitry. Circuitry seemed to or appears to have formed a mind, a mastermind. And this mastermind has developed personalities from combinations of circuitry out of this mastermind. And these personalities are testing all the circuitry within themselves. And it's like we're seeing just how far all the circuitry can go.
Yes.
It might even, maybe we even overwork it. But it seems like there's a lot of potentials, a lot of combination of energy, bombardment, connections, and that's what we're all about.
Our mind is a bunch of circuits.
Yeah, it's a bunch of circuits that originally were formed by energy. Different levels of energy, different types of energy bombarding one another.
What kind of energy?
Wow, everything that's form and everything that's around us gives off energy. gives off an impulse of some kind that we receive, that our body receives. That affects the circuitry. And there's no such thing as an isolated, you know, atmosphere where you don't receive this. You may form an atmosphere where you only receive one or two kinds of impulses, which makes it less complicated. For example, like a sterilization chamber.
Yes.
Because of the objects or the things within it, you're only receiving very few impulses that allow the body to function, to work. Wow, I'm getting a lot of input and I can't deciphered as quickly as I'm getting it.
Ask him if our understanding of brain-mind from his viewpoint where he is now is anywhere near accurate.
He says there are different approaches in the earth plane to the concept of brain-mind. Some more accurate than others, but that man has more than one mind. He has one brain, but he has more than one mind. There's a mind that's like the higher mind. And there's a human level mind that we usually think of as our analytic mind. And that the brain itself is a storehouse, like a computer. That's interesting. He says that the human brain has within it a composite of experiences that extend beyond the lifetime of the individual.
We've come to the end of this side of the cassette, so turn it over and we will continue on the other side. We will continue on the other side of the cassette.
And it's the mind that interprets. The higher mind knows. The higher mind is wise, in touch with the wisdom. But the ordinary, the everyday human mind is the interpreter of the information that is stored in the brain. And that sometime man may discover a way to tune into that storehouse of information, just like it has been discovered a way to tune into the stored memories of a lifetime, throughout the lifetime. He says it will be a natural evolutionary process that will go along with the development of a higher level of consciousness. That some of the attempts at jolting the mind, no, the brain, by forceful means have sometimes been harmful. Some of the heavy drug usage particularly sometimes create a lesion between the memory bank in the current short-term, even long-term human memory. And the lesion is something that, I mean, it's like a leakage, so that some of these things would leak through, but not in a in an organized, sensible fashion, creating apparent psychotic episodes. And not particularly useful. Some of our methods of attempting to cure these psychotic episodes are more disastrous than helpful. But other more gentle, that particularly in terms of drugs he's talking about, with just a kind of gentle understanding, patience, the kind of reaching out to the person on an unconscious level. Some of these scars may be healed. And in the case of psychotic episodes, it's more useful to the individual to heal over these leakage spots than to try to pry them open further. Because if we allow the patterns, say, in a more normal brain, if we allow the patterns to develop in their own way, there will be spontaneous states in which the stored memory will pour through. He says this work that we're doing now is one way of tapping into that information.
And in spite of the bad quality of the recording, we think you'd like to hear The Final Visit with Miranon.
I have transcended to another level now. It is very nice for me. How are you experiencing your transition? You have the potential at this point to bring into harmony all of the physical forces that have caused you much pain. You must remember that it is a pulsing that carries you through, and that it is important for you to experience both sides of the pulsing. It is very different for me now. Words become very inadequate, but there is a greater recognition of the work I have before me and of the work that I have done. I feel as if I have more understanding of where it is I must work. I am working at this point in achieving a greater harmony within the consciousnesses that make up my particular being. I had started working on this before I crossed. I had not understood the full scope of what it was I had to do. Sometimes it seems like a lot, but I know that it will be accomplished. There has also come almost what I would call a gentle sadness with the crossing. And I know that that will become modified as I adjust to the changes. Mine is a world that experiences much differently, and I do not have a body. I am almost as light, and before I made the transition, mine was a world that vibrated in a very light and beautiful color. I feel very close to tears, which it is not possible for me to experience. And I cannot clearly put into words what it is. But now my world is very different. Perhaps it is as if you were to have to leave your mountains and know that you would never experience them again. I am sure as I grow and understand more of this level, I will find much to replace it. It is very beautiful here. And I have more awareness of the spiraling effect of consciousness throughout the universe. It is very difficult for me now. As I said earlier, Liana is also making a change. This has not been accomplished for her yet. And Liana is also working with some inner conflicts as to just what purpose I am for her. And this she must resolve for the contact to be meaningful for her. She floated away and I was going to remain somewhat quiet in the presence here. It is very comfortable for me here, and I enjoy the experience of sharing with you and with her. I send you much love.
And I do.
As our experience broadens, we learn that each part of our growth adds to the evolvement. It will come for her. Much has happened for you and for all of us. Goodbye, Ashanin.
The last message from Miranon. I wonder what he's doing now. Well, we did have some unproven events take place, opportunities missed, as it were. In one session, for example, we had been given instructions on a special method of using what we thought was consciousness to move to another location. The only question was exactly how this would affect the individual. And in that particular session, something very unusual did take place. One of our explorers decided to perform this with full awareness of the problems that might be encountered. And he went into the booth and moved quickly up into our focus 10 and 12 and beyond. Then he began to apply this new technique that he had learned from our explorers. I happened to be sitting in the control room at that time as monitor. And as he said, well, I'm going to try it now. And I said, fine. And about 5 seconds later, all of our life support readout gauges simply dropped. It was as if there was no one in the booth at all. All of our monitoring instruments simply went dead. And I waited. I watched. Not a single flicker came from the gauges. It was very, very tense for a moment. And then 1 minute passed. And then 2 minutes, and about 2 minutes and 30 seconds, I got up and started to leave, thinking, well, I better get into the control from the control room and into the booth to see if I could do anything to resuscitate that body that should be there. I was up and on my way when suddenly all of the gauges came back to life and everything appeared normal. I sat back down again with a great sigh of relief, and a moment later, the explorer's voice came back through, and he did report that he actually moved to this other location and seemed to physically touch a number of items and objects when he was there. Sadly enough, we had no proof that he was there, that he did touch these items, other than identifying him, which we did later. And when dead, I had gotten up quickly and gone over into the booth. Perhaps I would have known for sure. Did he or did he not take his physical body with him? What happened to cause the gauges to all go dead? Well, just another missed opportunity among many. But what have we really learned to date from the Explorer sessions? Aside from the awe-inspiring cosmological concepts presented, and that's certainly a monumental aside, what struck us as truly profound was the evidence of a technology being used, the product of a science, knowledge, training, intellect, call it what you will, so far beyond or different from any present level of our understanding that we felt inadequate and challenged at the same time. There were different methods or techniques used which seemed dependent upon the handling of specific areas, switching channels, as it were, because of the need to be specific instead of general, or to let the explorer read from a page, or to repeat what she hears, or to experience and report, sort of a video instead of audio, or simply because one method had too much interference or distortion to be usable, so the helpers switched to another frequency. What were these explorers trying to describe? Certainly not colored lights as we know it. Certainly not heat and cold. A technology? What else? So there you have it. The story behind the explorers. All are still alive and well. Obviously, their experiences as subjects significantly changed their lives. It couldn't be otherwise. At this point, we do hold to the substantiated belief that anyone can be an explorer. All it takes is an ability to make a shift in consciousness, to accept at the least possibility that you are more than your physical body, that you can and do exist in energy systems that are not limited to time, space, physical matter, that you can reach and communicate with intelligence beyond your physical consciousness. Call it what you will. Another part of you, your higher self, your soul, your helpers, guides, angels, non-physical friends and loved ones, God and intermediaries, that is for only you to determine in your own ultimate truth. You and no one else, especially this gatekeeper. This is Robert Monroe saying, I'll see you around, I hope.